Certified financial planner Dave Petzo. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petzo Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Petzo.
Hello and good morning. Wow, what a volatile market, right? Isn't that crazy? Just crazy. Back and forth. We start off with everything is bad. I mean, everything is bad. The market can't possibly go up. And I know, you know, all the commentators on TVs, but, you know, people like Cramer, of course, Cramer, you know, nailed it, right? You know, we're all worried about it. He always calls after the fact. And then, of course, when the market surprised us with a great recovery at the end of the week, he was, of course, on top of that and didn't know why anybody would be doom and gloom. It's amazing, the commentary back and forth, back and forth. When the reality is this, really not much change, did it, day to day? You know, we still don't have Greece staying in the Union, do we? We have them wishing they hadn't held a referendum. We have them begging for money. What do we need to do? Maybe it might have been an idea to do that earlier, but, you know, before they decided we're just, you know, the heck with you, and then we're going to do a referendum to really put it to you. And everybody said, fine, you're out. And they come begging back. We don't want to go. So nothing really changes, right, from day to day, but the market swings day to day quite a bit. No resolution there. China was a disaster, and then, whoops, it wasn't at the end of the week. Just when everybody was sure it was a disaster, it got its footing. What, 2-5% gains back-to-back? On Thursday and Friday, crazy. Crazy markets. So is that scary? And that's what I want to focus on. Is that scary? And everybody, yeah, I know. Yeah, it's scary. Oh, of course it's scary. I don't like it. We should love it. We need to love it. We need to learn to love the volatility. It is the only advantage we have. It's also our biggest psychological problem. It's what we usually succumb to. It causes us, generally speaking, most investors, to behave poorly. Almost all the time. Almost all the time. And so we look at this, it's a double-edged sword, right? On one hand, it's really the best thing you have. It's all you have. That's it. That's all you got. Because otherwise, everybody would be like, well, yeah, this is a good company. It's okay. Everybody buys. There's no sellers. It just kind of goes up. And what do you think the returns would be? Exactly. In a nice, quiet, apparently little risk scenario, would not have any returns. It'd pay the same as a bond or cash. It's the volatility. It's that dive down. Because the company hasn't really changed. It's gone down because of this little country like Greece. And we're drawn in because everybody All the papers are full of it. Greece is this. Is there going to be a contagion? And we got to go on TV and look at that. And that's all they talk about. And then, of course, somebody who, you know, has noticed that the market hasn't done much, really, in regards to Greece. Maybe down a little. Was it really Greece? Who knows? But not much. We're just bored with it now, aren't we? I mean, it's just a bore to talk about Greece. It is. And so some smarty pants gets on there, you know, and he's going to be right out front of it. Because remember, you can't be very optimistic. If you are, you're not as smart as the pessimists. That's just the way it works. Pessimism is, you know, a little bit of skepticism. It's thoughtful. It's a, you know, scratch your beard, tug on your beard kind of a thoughtful. You don't scratch your beard, tug on your beard, and talk about how good things are. That they just put you in a corner as just Pollyanna. But they get on there and they go, hey, I'm not at all worried about Greece, because how can you be worried about Greece when Greece is already just on fire and nothing's going on in the market? So the genius that wants to be really smart is now not worried about Greece. They're worried about China. China's imploding. A cyber attack, something that we can sink our teeth into, something that's real, that's believable, and then we can chew on that for a while and be smart. And it's just amazing how we just rotate from one thing to the next and we miss this simple point. The fundamentals of these companies have not changed. Only the price, which is your one opportunity, your one advantage to make more than any other investment by so far that nothing is even close. But we package this as some kind of a scary thing. Oh, the risk of stocks. I mean, a couple hours from now, there'll be somebody talking about that. You don't want to risk your capital in the stock market. Like, oh my gosh, you know, it's a casino. No, it's an investment. Better than any other. Yes, that's what you want to do. Of course that's what you want. But it's hard. Volatility is our ally. You see, volatility works both ways. Let's say you're in retirement, because I can hear it now. But it doesn't. I'm not buying that much anymore. I need it to go up. I don't want any of this down volatility. That's fine for people putting money in their 401k. I get that. No. You know what? People putting money in their 401ks don't get that. We always get what the other guy can be doing. But all the way through, while the money's growing, every pullback, we watch money flow out, not in. People don't increase their allocations to stocks when they go on sale. They don't do that. It's always easy to see in hindsight, but people don't do that. It's always easy to see in somewhere in another situation that I'm not in. I'm behaving rationally. However, these people over here are not. I get that if you were putting money in. Even though when I was putting money in for years, I had trouble staying in and adding to investments when they were down. That's the honest truth. Because it's true of all of us. You have to force yourself to do it. I remember saying this so many times in 2009, the beginning of 2009, when the meltdown was just in full force, right? Every day, every week, the market's down more and more and more. There is no hope. And at that point, you just simply have to say, I'm putting a stake in the ground. I am not selling at these prices. End of story. I'm not going to watch it anymore. I'm not going to contemplate. I wonder what I can do to raise capital. Done. Stake in the ground, period. I'm not selling. And if we take that kind of attitude to, I don't care what's going on in the world. These great corporations I own are going to continue to sell everything from microchips to fancy phones to stuff I never thought I would need, but I have to have it now, things. To soap. To cereal. It just oil. Everything. These great companies don't change 5 or 10% in value in a week. Only their price does that. And sometimes when the market has these hiccups of, you know, maybe even 5% down, you will find companies that are down 10, 20%, sometimes even more. Even if the market's not down at all, there will be sectors like energy that are just whacked hard. I'm not saying go buy energy. I'm saying there usually are bargains somewhere in the world, in some sector, in some companies, even in a bull market, because of volatility, and only because of volatility. You see, you know, you go to a horse race, right? You know, sports betting is the same type of thing, right? In a sense, you're betting against other people. That's what sets the parimutuel odds. Or they move a line. You know, in football, the line will move to try to draw money on the other side. In a sense, you're really playing against everybody else, minus, obviously, a pretty huge cut for the house, if you will. In this game, there is no cut for the house. But minor trading costs, that's it. I mean, really minor. Really minor. Are we playing against other people? No, not really. But other people's actions can create volatility that gives us bargains. Or when you're in retirement, it's the volatility that takes stocks higher. We only think volatility is like a dirty word, right? It's not up. It's always down. Margaret was really volatile today. Everybody goes, oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. It's not, oh, good. That means it went up a lot. We don't think like that. But that's what it does. And then sectors will catch fire. And that's where you can harvest gains to eat. So volatility works all of the time. It's just we always think of it as the down. So even in retirement, no, it doesn't really, down times don't really work for you. That's why you need to have other assets to eat off of when the market does have its inevitable, certain to occur over and over again all the days of our lives. Market corrections. On its way to all-time highs, as it has for all of our lives and our parents' lives. It's the way it works. But what we do is we wreck it. It's such an easy game. This really isn't hard. It's such an easy game. When you take a step back and look at it as if you were that other person looking into somebody else's life. Not you, not your portfolio right now. Somebody else's and what they should be doing. Here's what that somebody else should be doing. Buy them and put them away. Quit trying to trade. Quit thinking like you're so smart. You don't know anything. You know less than anything. Nobody has ever known the future. And the quicker you can admit you know nothing, the easier it will be to own great corporations for long periods of time. That's what somebody else should do. And when the market isn't moving in your favor, maybe you've tactically overweighted and underweighted the wrong sectors. Oh. Can you imagine that ever happening? Because everybody's always perfectly right. That other person, not you, should just relax. Chill out. You'll get your turn. The greats are only right slightly more than half the time. That means they're wrong a lot. Relax. It's not over till the fat lady sings. We're just talking about the volatility being our friend. And when you have harvested some gains, and then maybe the market does correct, you may need some income, but you may not need all that cash, and you can redeploy it into some newfound bargains. It's never all or none. And that's so much what we think about and do with our investments, isn't it? We should be in stocks or out of stocks. You mean like all in? Uh-huh. Or all out? Uh-huh. That's what I mean. Why? Or just have this tiniest little waiting because, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world. Like there hasn't always been. There's always been stuff in the world. Always. I know it feels like today's problems are just today's problems. It's just so fresh and I don't know how we're ever going to get out of the Greek situation or a slowdown in another country as large as China, you know, like Japan was, you know, 20 years ago. Yeah, I don't know how we'll survive. Seriously, that's what goes for discussion. And it's easy. All you have to do is click online. Just go to, like, you know, Yahoo Finance or something. Every article on there. You know, Stansberry Research, Stockton. And then there's got to be 3,000 articles out there about, or not articles, you know, how Warren Buffett says this or is worried about that. Unbelievable. I don't know why people click on this nonsense and want to believe it. I don't know. And every one of the websites are always driving you to what? Gold. Gold. Gold's a doomsday thing. That's all. So if you want to saturate your mind with all the negative stuff and bury yourself in fear and make it completely impossible to do what you know the other guy, not you, no, because, you know, I'm not talking about you, but you know what the other person should be doing with their investments. That other person in, you know, a little bit different situation than yours. Maybe they're not as clever as you. Don't have all the blog connections you do to, you know, for the doomsday of the day report. Would you really tell somebody that's a good thing to do is to keep going down the rabbit holes of the gold pimps? Is that what you'd do? Would you want them to listen to radio programs that promise you market returns with no risk? Magic fairy dust just sprinkled all over the place. But that's what sells. Fear sells. It sells bad products. It sells gold. It sells bad newsletters. And you never have to apologize for the latest, the dollar's imploding statement. Latest, the world is ending statement. You can roll right into the next Shemitah and Blood Moon. You can roll right into HR 24-something. I saw another one the other day. Unbelievable. It's like we don't even remember. That's the point. They know people won't hold them accountable, so they can say the same thing, just regurgitate it every year. This new House bill over here does what to the dollar? I assume, I don't even need to click on it, right? We just know it's going to be the end of the dollar. and you need to buy gold, and you need to subscribe to our newsletter, and that's the way we'll help you navigate around this unbelievably difficult time ahead for America. Great. 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 That masks for getting information. No, it's not. It's not. It's terrible. So, volatility is our advantage. It's hard to see at the time, but it's the one huge advantage you have, where you can simply say, once in a while, I can buy a company for a 10, 15, or 20% discount, maybe even more, a great corporation that really didn't change that much. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's dave@petsofinancial.net. And I do hope you will join us on the phone right now. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436.
Hello, welcome, and thanks again for joining us. Now, please do join us on the phones. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. If you prefer, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. You know, as we reflect on Greece, the news, the focus, if you will, on this tiny, tiny country, you know, you just have to realize it just isn't that much that changes every single day. But they sure make a lot of noise about a lot of things. And thank goodness for Wall Street, as slow as it's been, they've got something to chew on. I don't have any idea what CNBC would talk about. I really don't know what they would talk about without Greece. And now I guess we've got China we can worry and fuss about. But I'll tell you what really matters, and we're heading into that season now. Kevin Miller and I talked about this on Tuesday. Normally it's Monday, but we talked this last Tuesday. And he hit the nail on the head, and that is earnings. What about corporate earnings? Boom. That's the question. Not what about Greece? Not what about Shemitas? Not what about what the Federal Reserve is going to do or not do? What about earnings? What are the corporations that I'm owning doing? Are they selling more stuff? If you own Disney, are you really supposed to be concerned with China? Are you really supposed to be worried about Greece leaving the euro? Or would you really be worried about whether more people are going to their parks? Whether the movies that they make are doing well or poorly? And shouldn't we be focused on whether ESPN is kicking tail? Or should we just be running around like our hair's on fire, fussing about things we can do nothing about and know nothing about? You see, it's pretty crazy. But we do that game, don't we? We do that. It's pretty nutty. We drive ourselves crazy, and I'm not sure why. Just not sure why we do that. With things that don't matter. And all it does is that by doing all of that and digging in deeper to worries that we really don't know the conclusion of, we really don't know what it means. If it goes either direction, we don't know what it means. But what we can try to focus on is whether the companies that we own are doing well. And we're heading into earnings season. Thank goodness. Maybe for 5 seconds, we can focus on corporate results over the next few weeks instead of what's going on overseas. And I don't mean ISIS. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We went a little long in the first segment, so let's get back on track, and we're going to take a break here for Fox News. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Dave Petso on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You know, this is great timing for email. I'm sure you all heard that wonderful guaranteed program out there that you guarantee and don't have to lose any money in the Wall Street casino. At any rate, so, Dave, how in the world can these companies continue to say that you can get market returns without market risk? Why are they able to say things that aren't true? Good question. Some are and some are not. Here's the two reasons you can't. One is if you're a certified financial planner, you can't make stuff up. You have to fully disclose. Secondly, the FINRA and the SEC. So if you are a securities registered individual, you can't make that up either. You need to have full disclosure. That would be anybody that sells securities, you would think. Aren't they talking about securities that are tied to the market but guarantee you can't lose? The answer is everybody would think that. But somehow they were able to lobby it that only the insurance companies that guarantee it say it's, since it's a guaranteed product, we don't have to do that. And you wonder then, well, how can they just lie about insurance? And the answer is, I don't think they can. We have a new, they shouldn't be able to. The old insurance commissioner for the state of Idaho apparently didn't care. And with that kind of a culture, the investigators don't care. So they were free to do and say anything. Dean Cameron is a longtime insurance guy. I've known him. I don't know him personally very well. I know of him. But I know him from a long, long time ago. And he just seems like a straight-up guy. And he's taken over the Department of Insurance. Let's hope that some changes are made there. I'm hoping to have him on the program to talk about it. But the answer is buyer beware. I don't know why, and I'm really sorry that that's the case. It's infuriating, and every time I think about it, I really truly do have to take a deep breath and wonder what in the world is with this world, right? And what is with the regulators if they don't do anything about it? Well, why do they call themselves regulators? Why don't they just, oh, that's right, for the most part, they're just bureaucrats. They're not really doing anything or trying to do anything or trying to solve any problems. They're just bureaucrats punching a clock. But that's not all government workers. It's not. It's not. And I'm hopeful for the first time in a long time that the Department of Insurance is going to be real now. I just cannot believe how broken it is. It's such a do-nothing place. It's so totally broken. I just can't believe the things we see. And then when people will actually go forward and try to file a complaint, if you're over 18 and you signed here on page 37, you should have fully known, you know, that all about this. Really? Why is it no other industry can do that? When you have complex products, hard to understand, that on page 49 of the prospectus, you should have read that thing and known that this thing would have happened or could have happened over here. It's really sad. And so many people have been ripped off blindly. And it always goes back And just go, and never mind. Just a spin a do-nothing. I'm just hopeful it's not going to be a do-nothing department going forward. It's supposed to be protecting people. It's what they're supposed to do. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Jim, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Morning, Dave. How's it going?
I'm doing good. I'm glad you called. I was starting to get all fired up and huffy.
Well, you know, it's kind of humorous, actually, to hear one of those commercials right in the middle of what you're railing against them.
I know. I thought this was just hysterical. You know, I get so many of those types of emails, right? Question or phone calls. How can they do that?
Well, you know, not being a lawyer, but I know lawyers deal in words, you know, usually lots of words. But when they talk about stock market gains, maybe it's the fact that they don't put in the word like total or full.
Right.
Or, you know, they're saying gains. They're not saying what you could be having. They're saying maybe a portion thereof.
That's correct. And it is a portion thereof. There's no question about that. But that is what any time you're a securities licensed person or a certified financial planner, you must say that. You have to say the full extent. You know, it's one of those things, right? It's the lying by omission. That's what it is, and it is a lie.
Not telling the full truth or whatever.
Correct. It's intentionally misleading. Intentionally, and you cannot do that with securities.
But like you say, I mean, it's up to the person. Let the buyer beware, and the buyer must sit there and and reason that on their own.
I know, I know, but they're not.
Like you say, I mean, if you had somebody on there, it'd be great to discuss the thing, you know.
Well, I know. And I've always said they get mad at me when I talk about the fact that, you know, it's a lie. You can't have market returns without risk. They get mad, and I hear about it, but nobody ever calls to say you're just dead wrong, Dave. You see, it's right here. And the thing is just like you talk about it, you don't have losses. You know, you're right. And I've analyzed this and analyzed it and analyzed it, and I've talked about it till we're all, you know, sick of it, but it's amazing that even if you put the money in at exactly the right time, meaning right before it melted down, you would do better, far better, multiples better. Even putting it in right before a market crash in a supposed product that protects you from losing anything. You don't go down with it, but you don't come back up either.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it's anyway.
They're the Department of Insurance, aren't they?
Yeah, that's who's supposed to be covering them, and all they do is pat them on the backs and high-five them.
Kind of an interesting story I'll tell you real quick. You know, I dealt with the Department of Insurance once,
yeah.
And this was like back in 87, and what happened was I wanted some health insurance. So I got this health insurance out of this company in Dallas, so they called me up and, asked me some questions over the phone. Well, I, put down that I was not a smoker, right? Anyway, they asked me, if I smoked. And so I told them I smoke maybe one pack of cigarettes every 3 months. Well, in their book, I'm a smoker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then it took me, 6 months to a year, to get my premium back. So I actually went down to the Department of Insurance here, and, finally I think they helped me resolve that. But that was my little story there.
Yeah, well... Yeah, I'm glad they resolved it. It's just become one of those things where I don't know what to do when people come in and I've seen them. We had a lady where somebody talked her into taking money out of her pension. It was like $12,000, pay taxes on it and a penalty, and put it into a whole life policy, and the premium was like $9,000. She doesn't have $9,000. So, and guess what her value was at the end of 1 year? Zero. So this is, and the Department of Insurance comes back and says, well, it doesn't look like they did anything wrong. You signed the paperwork.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
That's the answer from the regulators. And this kind of thing goes on and on. So it is a frustratingly difficult thing when they're not protecting the people they're supposed to protect.
Yep.
But anyway, all right.
One other thing about, I saw this article on China. Now, I mean, a lot of, and what you're talking to here is pretty much uninformed or worried U.S. investors, but I guess we're at least a little bit more savvy than, like, the Chinese.
Yeah.
As I understand it, and the, my view of the Chinese is pretty much stereotypical, peasants that don't know much, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, they don't have any money to lose. I mean, not a lot of people do. But anyway, supposedly in China, you know, the, I also heard that there are about three bubbles. That China's in about three bubbles. And so the thing over the last year or something like that has gone up 150%.
Yep.
And like everybody else, they get into the ball game, you know, at the end when the things are high. And now things are going down.
Yep.
And these poor old Chinese, and they were interviewing a few of them, you know. I mean, you know, you really feel sorry for them.
Yeah.
Because they definitely don't have money to lose.
Right. It is very sad that the wrong people lose in every bubble in housing here. And people, you know, it is sad that that happens.
Well, you know, in their case, I think the government, to a large extent, is either telling them or requiring them to invest, you know. You know, do it.
They are. I think that's...
And they do it, whatever. And so now... You know.
Yeah. Well, they're making it easy, right? They're opening up the and diminishing margin requirements, things like that. So people that don't have much money can go ahead and get cheap, borrowed money so they can buy more than they ever should have.
Well, yeah, that's another thing they mentioned on margin.
Yep.
And, you know, margin is the number one no-no, in my opinion.
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah, you, I mean, it's, yeah, yeah. It can wipe you out, no doubt about it.
So anyway.
All right.
Take care, Dave.
Jim, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too.
And our number is 580-5436. It's 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. Ida Matters with Dave Petso on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Isn't it awesome that Albertsons is coming full circle, right? That it's back. Isn't that the greatest? Wow. I don't know. It's just one of those things. You grow up with this in this area, I'm in my adult life anyway. It's all about Albertsons, right? I mean, it was such a great company, so many employees from the companies that were servicing. You know, the Heinz and all that, Procter & Gamble, all of those companies, and all those great jobs, and all the wealth that was built. And the foundation, the Albertsons Foundation, all the work that they do locally, but all the wealth that was created and all the other little foundations, right, from people that had their stock. And then, of course, thanks, Larry Johnston, it all kind of went away. All did. And then, when Albertsons did go away, it was part of Super Value, whoever the heck they were, and sold off for a little bit. And then part of the company and Super Value wasn't having any success with it. So a bunch of real food, you know, execs took the company with Cerberus and the private equity, and they took part of those stores, which is really, anyway, and then they took over Safeway this past year. They're the second largest grocery store. Awesome. Yeah, awesome. Second largest. From gone. And now they're going public, and they're back. They're here in Boise. It's just a cool story. So really, I mean, seriously, to the executive team out there, I just, hats off. Great job. Great stuff. And thanks for doing it. You guys have earned every penny for sure. And we're going to be the benefactors of that in this area. It's just awesome. It's exciting. Isn't business exciting? Isn't business great? Employing people, the tax base, creating cool stuff, a better store experience on this one. And if it's not, then we go somewhere else and we blow that one up and it's a better experience. It just gets better. Why? Not because it's ordained from some central planning bureaucracy. Individuals running a business for profit to make it all happen. It's magic. It's magic. It's the invisible hand magic. Hey, coming up in the second hour, I'm going to talk about the bond bubble, right? So I got an email yesterday because Alan Greenspan was on Fox Business Channel talking about the bond bubble. So I want to talk about that in our education segment. What is a bond bubble? What are they talking about? Is it dangerous? Is it something that we need to be worried about? And everybody's a bubble here and a bubble there. Is China in a bubble? What about the stock market? Isn't it a bubble? Everybody wants to call a bubble. Everybody wants to hit it. So we'll talk about that after the news. We'll be back after the news.
Of the summer, the Huckleberry Jam.
3 days of camping under the stars.
Fun on the water of Lake Cascade.
Mountain biking and zip lining at Tamarack Resort.
Tons of craft beer.
In 2 days, jams full of live music on the state park's Passport main stage.
I always have to steal my kids from you.
Commercial Tire presents the Huckleberry Jam, August 14th and 15th at Tamarack Resort, featuring Ben Harper and the Innocent Criminals, Brett Denon, and so much more. All the details at thehuckleberryjam.com.
So, what is love?
Love is being independent.
Love is dancing.
A Shriners Hospital for Children.
Love is a new smile.
At Shriners Hospitals for Children, love is caring for a child regardless of the family's ability to pay. Learn how you can send your love to the rescue at Love.
They're not this station. They're not my broker-dealer. In fact, we will talk about occasionally stocks or a sector or something like that. And, of course, I don't know your portfolio. And the idea of going out and you buying it or selling it based on some comment here is silly. Don't do that. Don't do that. It doesn't matter what somebody says. You should buy or sell, and then change their mind the next day. It's silly. It's a silly thing. So what we want to try to do is we want to think about things, teach, if you will. We want to learn together and grow. And I like phrasing it this way. I think a lot of times what we want to do is we want to take a look at that coin and we want to turn it over and look at the other side. Just contemplate. You know, is that true, you know, the way they're talking about it over here, and to think of things in a little bit different way so that we hopefully are encouraged if we're steeled up and ready for the fact that, as I said in the first hour, the markets are volatile, and that's the big advantage we have. That's the big advantage we have. There is that volatility. It enables us to get higher prices for things because they spike higher sometimes, and we can either reposition the money into cheaper things, or maybe we need it to live on in retirement. And so when sectors move higher, that's great. Or when things go down, it gives us the only opportunity we have to buy bargains. And we forget, don't we? So what I'm saying is we want to try to look at things the opposite, right? So how does everybody view, you know, from the sharks selling equity indexed annuities to people and telling them they get stock market returns with no risk? Because we've, you know, got a corner on the magic fairy dust. They say all those things, and people believe that. Why? And you shouldn't invest in the Wall Street casino because of fear. So we want to flip that over. We say, oh, it's volatile. Well, is that bad? Is that all bad? It's the only advantage we have. It's the only advantage we have. So we talk about that, and we think about things, and this brings up this question. So here it is. In an interview with Alan Greenspan on Fox Business Channel, he expressed concern about a bond bubble. Perhaps you would discuss what the bond bubble is about on your program. Thank you. And thank you, Don and Trudy. I appreciate it very much. Thank you for the email. In fact, I have to also give a little shout-out because this whole education segment actually came from these folks. So thanks, you guys. So, and that also brings this up. If you have something you know, you want me to dive into a little deeper in our education segment? Or just a question? Shoot that over to us. Dave@petsofinancial.net. Now, if it's a question like this one that I think is broad enough, we'll use it in like an education segment, you know, or heck, I've used them in my opening monologue before. Because they're just like, sometimes it just opens up to something, I hadn't thought about that, or we haven't talked about it in a long time. Or at the very least, we just want to talk to you, okay? So do, give us a call this hour, okay? Goodness gracious, the phones do work. All right. Now, what is this bubble? And let's talk bubbles in general, okay? Because bubbles pop, and we had a internet stock bubble in 2000. We did not have a stock market bubble. We did not. We had an internet stock bubble. And it was a big deal when it popped. Because it had everybody in. Pop. Lots of people wiped out. Lots of people wiped out. Was the market wiped out? Not at all. No. Did the market have a serious downturn? Absolutely. And actually, a lot of stocks didn't have a serious downturn at all. One of the reasons that the stock market generally, and one of the reasons I'm not a big believer in an index, is because when sectors get really hot, they take up a bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger part of the index itself. So you're forced as an index buyer to keep buying more and more and more. And so what happened during that time is the S&P 500 ended up with about 40% in tech stocks, which we know how that went, right? I mean, the NASDAQ was down 75%. Because it's so laden with tech stocks. And with 40% in the S&P, it actually fell 50%. However, a broadly diversified portfolio went down about 15% during the entire decline. That's a big difference. That's not a bubble. So I want to make it specific. When we talk bubbles, what are we talking about? And so then we move on to what happened in 2006. We got into a real estate bubble. We really, if you will, there was a leverage bubble. Thanks a lot for that one, Alan Greenspan. Seriously, so now we're worried about a bubble now that, anyway, never mind. Greenspan seemed to do a fine enough job most of the time, but towards the end, created credit conditions with the Fed that enabled this bubble to build in real estate, and it popped. Liar loans, collateralized whatevers that people never understood what they were buying, actually spread that paper all around the world. Foreign banks held it, foreign investors held it, and of course, that all ended very, very badly. And with it, it took down the stock market, as we know. Nearly took the whole system down. That's leverage and that bubble. Now, the bond bubble that we're talking about now, what is the bond bubble? Well, bond prices or prices in any particular area could be thought of as a bubble. I would say there's many bubbles that have built over time. Most of the time, we don't really care. People don't care that the sports memorabilia bubble burst. That baseball trading cards, right? That we all had as kids, really aren't worth a fortune. They're not today. I'm not sure they're coming back. Tulip bulbs in the old days, right? So all of those things, lots of things. Now that one was a big deal. The China tea trading bubble. Big deal back then, centuries ago. When people get caught up in easy money, whether it's Chinese stocks for brand new hundreds of millions of Chinese opening up brokerage accounts and can margin those accounts and get rich. So are we in a bubble? Are we in a bond bubble? Now, we've talked about this and all the debt that's being issued right now. And that's, I'm sure, what Greenspan was referring to, is that there's so much debt out there that's been issued at very low interest rates. But again, let's talk about the bond bubble popping. What does that mean? Is it something that it creates this incredible disaster? I think it's going to be a problem for a lot of investors who seriously don't understand that bonds go up and down in value. You can take a loss on a bond portfolio. You absolutely can when interest rates rise. No question about it. But a lot of people don't. But what does this look like to the overall economy if we have a bond bubble that pops? The answer is I'm having a hard time understanding what that would look like. Why is this, it's a bond bubble, too much exuberance in bonds? But is there? Are we really in a bond bubble? And I would say, no, we're not. I think most people do seem to understand that bonds can go down in price. Certainly the most sophisticated investors do understand that. Many don't. I get that. And those folks are going to get hurt when bond prices decline. And they will decline severely if interest rates rise severely. So let's look at the world today and what that possibility of rates rising severely looks like. When we are talking about all bonds in the world, it's a competitive picture. Money's free to travel the world. Different types of asset, different countries to invest in. So the question becomes, if the European Union is continuing to buy bonds and doing QE and all that, and rates are incredibly low, what does that do to our interest rates? I think it puts quite a heavy blanket on the possibility of rates rising severely here. I mean, would you rather have a U.S. Treasury bond or an Italian bond? Okay? Italy's heavily in debt, so on and so forth. The same interest rates. I'm going with the U.S. I'm going with a higher quality bond. So are all investors. And when people buy the bonds, it keeps the prices down. So we are the benefactor of that as interest rates stay low in our country. Now, as I look at it, and everybody's talked about this, Greenspan's not the only one. I'm not making fun of him at all. And heaven forbid that I disagree with Alan Greenspan. Smart man. But I don't see, when we talk about bubbles, that usually means that we have great repercussions, devastating repercussions from it. Could cause a recession, that kind of thing. And I'm not sure what point he would be making. So if he did make a point, I'd love to hear back from you as well as to what that point would be as to how the economy is going to be whacked. Are people going to lose money on bonds when interest rates rise? Absolutely. Absolutely they will. And so will institutions. That's why people talk about using short-term bonds over long-term, because they don't move in price as much when rates rise, because they're maturing more quickly. But is there a bond bubble that would cause impact in the economy? I think not. The concern I have in regards overall to that would be this. Can the Federal Reserve shrink its balance sheet without causing great harm to the economy? Can they? I don't know. I don't know. Certainly, the jury's out on that one. Big time. We don't know. We don't know. Because they haven't done it yet, right? We stopped QE, but they have not shrunk the balance sheet. It's huge. As far as a bond bubble, I don't see it being dangerous. But understanding that, like a teeter-totter, this is the thing I want to make sure everybody understands. Interest rates rise, bond prices fall. Think of a teeter-totter, right? Interest rates fall, bond prices rise. Teeter-totter. When we understand that and you get interest rates as low as they are, here's the deal. I'm not predicting interest rates are going to rise anytime. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know from the 2.4-ish that we're at right now if they go down below 2 again or up over 3. Which one comes first? I don't know. I'm sure there's plenty of people out there who have commented both ways, wrongly, and continue to proclaim that they know where interest rates are going for whatever reasons, and I'm sure they're very smart reasons. Economists get interest rates wrong a remarkable amount of time, truly remarkable, as in a coin flip does better. So I think that to make that stance is not a good one. Here's how I would make it and think about it. If you're talking about a straight-up bond and let's say a 10-year treasury, a 10-year treasury is risk-free from a credit risk. So it's the purest form of all that matters are interest rate moves. But what I know about a 10-year treasury is I'm going to get 2.4% roughly. And this is up a nice amount, but roughly what the inflation rate has been for last 30 years, slightly below. But I'm going to call it break even. So here's what I know. I can't win with that. I can't win. I can't beat inflation. I can't win. I don't want to own it if I can't win. So bond bubble or not, interest rates rising or not, I don't want to own that asset because all I can do is lose. I cannot win. If I cannot win and I can lose, say I need the money before 10 years and interest rates rise, I don't want to play. That sounds silly. So when we're thinking about it, whether it's a bubble or not, when you think about any particular investment, what we want to be thinking about is the risk of that investment versus the return of that investment. And if it's out of whack, don't touch. I don't care how sure you are, you're going to get a certain percentage. An investment that does 6% and 6% and 6% and then loses 30% is not a 6% winner. It's an overall loser. So we have to be careful and evaluate the risk and understand. I'm not sure that, you know, people have said we're in the stock market's in a bubble. Really? Really? It's a bubble everywhere. We're always looking for a bubble. There was a bubble, according to Janet Yellen, she didn't say bubble, in fairness, like 100% ago in biotech. Alan Greenspan famously said there was irrational exuberance in the stock market thousands of points before the top. Thousands of points. So I calling bubbles seems to be more popular than the reality. And for me, my definition of a bubble is when something pops and creates economic distress, severe, or severe market distress, broadly speaking, that even can roll over an impact, as in 2008, and rolls over and impacts the stock market, and then from there rolls over and impacts the entire economy. It was a big deal. That's a big deal. Bond bubble, just not sure how that's a big deal. I really am not at this point. All right, our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Thank you so much for that question. Appreciate it. And if you have a question out there, would prefer email, it's dave@petzofinancial.net. But right now, please do ring us up. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Petzo on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and again, thank you for joining us. If you have any comments, questions during the week, you can shoot those over to petzofinancial.com. We also have podcasts there of past shows. We've got articles and calculators to help you as well with your financial planning. And it's a good way to just reach us if you have a question. Right now, though, if you have a question, shoot that over to us, dave@petsofinancial.net, or even better, just like Mike did here, give us a call. It's 580-5436. It's 580-KIDO. I'd love to just take your calls the rest of today. It would just be fantastic. I'm all out of stuff anyway. Come on. Give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind. Mike, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Dave, I've got a quick question for you on your education theme, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I'm shortly going to be going into retirement. Going to have to be making a lot of decisions here on what I want to do with my money. And I keep hearing over and over that rolling over a 401k into an IRA is not such the good deal that we've all been led to believe for years, because by the time they get done with all the fees and all that stuff, you actually end up losing money before you get started. Can you comment on that?
Well, I think overall what you're talking about is perhaps, anyway, the fees can be lower inside of a 401k, but sometimes they're not, Mike. So I don't think that's a totally fair comparison. But the Department of Labor has been trying hard to, if you will, put out an awful lot of information regarding the fees. And, of course, companies like Vanguard that have much lower fees than a regular manager does, that's not a passive investor. That's not a passive investor. An active investor is going to have higher fees, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's true. But as I've mentioned before, active versus passive, we've talked about that. And I can't give the name of the company, of course. And I'm not trying to defend all managers. They're not all good. But what I can say is that when we look at the different indices, like the S&P, and we look at you know, whether you're being passive or not, the S&P is the easiest one to measure. It's broadest, although it's really not very broad. It's the biggest U.S. companies. But when we look at track records of 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20, and 30 years with multiple time frames, meaning every month you roll forward 3, 5, and 10 years and so on, so you get thousands of data points over decades with multiple managers, literally hundreds of different managers, and you find with some of those groups that they actually beat the index consistently. And yes, that's after fees. And so they beat it consistently. In some cases, they beat it 100% of the time on long periods. Now, that's ridiculous when you think about that, because it changes the whole argument of you can't beat the market. These guys did. So it's not a one-off. There's a lot of managers out there that have done that. But really, as a whole team, you say, I'm not saying I'm banking on finding the next Peter Lynch. So that's the active versus passive. If you're only talking about inside of a 401k, I've just got a passive S&P 500, and now I'm going to go to active management, that is absolutely going to cost you more, period. If you're talking about it coming out and then staying passive, it probably costs you no more, Mike. It really doesn't. So if you're paying for help, then separately that's going to cost, right? Not just the management, but also what are we going to do to generate X amount of money?
Sure.
It's actually pretty tricky. It's not something you can just say, I'm going to go ahead and put it in the S&P 500 and hope it, you know, kind of works out. Because it doesn't a lot of times. When just balancing and diversified and harvesting gains in an intelligent and planned way would work. So it is a very tricky process when you're drawing income out. It's different than when you're growing it.
So buyer beware.
Well, yeah, it is always that. But I think that it's a bit overstated to say if I stay in my 401k versus an IRA, it's quite overstated that, you can't do that. You're just going to really get hammered in fees. Here's where I think we're mixing that up just a little bit, okay? It just dawned on me. I think that this is where, for example, people are taking money out and then moving it over into much more expensive for no reason. That's why the Department of Labor was going after Fidelity and things like that, because they were encouraging people to roll it over to 401ks that were more expensive, even if Fidelity was managing it in the 401k before. So in other words, the person just moved it over, and then Fidelity collected more fees, doing the same thing. So there were some circumstances out there, and I believe that's where people heard a lot of it. But listen, people going into retirement without knowing how they're going to harvest income for life is an enormous problem, and people need help. Don't be afraid of getting it.
Well, I appreciate it. It gives me a lot to think about. Got to be smart on the decisions that you make.
Yeah, you do, Mike. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. And Mike, I know you're not going to do this, but I can't help myself but to say it. Please don't buy some packaged product that promises you things that you know you can't get.
Oh, I got one right now, guys, trying to promise me what 16% guaranteed.
Perfect. Perfect. First-year guarantee. Locks you up for 10 or 15 years. It's an equity index annuity. I already know.
That's exactly right.
I know. Here's what I promise. You'll never get 16. Ever.
Oh.
Ever.
Well, that's not what I wanted to hear.
You won't get it. You won't get it, but you already knew that, Mike. There is no 16 in the world, is there?
No, there is not.
There is not. There is not. And so when people make up stuff like that, I'm done discussing it, because now I can't figure out what you're lying about and what you're truthful about.
Yeah, and that's the scary part.
Yeah.
That's the scary part.
Yeah, just walk away. You're done.
Okay. Well, I thank you for your input.
Mike, thank you. Thank you for your call. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye now. And our number is 580-5436. It's 580-KIDO. Ed, hang on here. I've got to take a quick break here for Fox News. And when we come back, we'd also love to take your calls. And if you prefer email, that's dave@petzofinancial.net.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. You know, I don't know if what you're doing this weekend, but if it doesn't include going out to the Boise Open, you're just missing one of the great events. It really is. It's really a hoot to get out, and you're going to see your friends. That's what you're going to see. So I hope you get a chance to go out, and again, hats off to them. Over $1 million again. 8 years in a row, I think it is. Over $1 million raised for charity. That's amazing. I mean, it's really unbelievable when you think about it. And what is it? Something like, it's approaching like 20 million, 25 million? I don't know. It's 20 or 25 million that has been raised for charity since this tournament started. It's just amazing. What an impact. I know it's just golf or whatever. It's amazing. Yeah, it shuts down my course, so I'm not happy about not being able to play there, but I am thrilled to go around and watch these guys play. It is amazing. They are just so good. And the organization is phenomenal. Just fantastic. What a neat, neat deal. All right, let's go ahead and go to the phones. And our number is 580-KIDO. Let's go to Ed. Ed, thanks for calling and holding. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, that Albertsons tournament is pretty awesome. I've been there many times.
Oh, good. Yes, yeah.
Speaking of Albertsons, I know she gave them kudos. But, you know, they didn't build that. Somebody else built that.
You're right. They didn't build that. I forgot. I'm so sorry. I'm giving credit. I forgot. I should have said Obama built that. That's right.
Right. Exactly.
That's right.
Say, would that be pretty good stuff having a portfolio? Albertsons.
I don't know. I can't say that at all, really. Seriously, they haven't decided what the price is.
Yeah,
we don't know
right.
until we get the pro forma and all. But the
right.
answer is, it's in my opinion, they have done so well. I mean, just think of where they came from. Just a small little group of, not tiny, tiny, but I mean, you know, a few hundred stores into
right.
thousands, and buying out Safeway and all the while returning massive amounts of capital to their investor, Cerberus. You know, they obviously are rock stars in their space.
We'll keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, another thing, Under Armour, what do you think of that company?
Well, obviously, these guys are making incredible clothes. They really are. I mean, it's technology, right? And I mean, I can't believe what we're going to be having for clothes in the future that maybe measure our heart rate, all those things, right? The clothes do, right? So, and Under Armour, I think, will be at the head of that. See, companies like that. But they are really dominant. They do a great job.
I think maybe he's giving a Nike run for their money.
They are. Nike is not keeping up. And what is the area that Under Armour just announced that was getting into that was right in Nike's wheelhouse? I don't think it's shoes, but it was something like that that was like brand new to them, but is going to be a category changer for them, too.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, I just thought I'd check on that. Okay, well, that's all I had, and thanks for taking my call.
Ed, thank you for your call. We appreciate it. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Oops, we lost our caller, so there's nobody on the board. So I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to get caught up on our breaks, give you a chance to give us a call, or shoot us an email, dave@petsofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. It's Money Matters with Dave Petso on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. And our board is clear. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Hey, Richard, thanks for the email. It's fairly long, but let me cover it. It's really just a couple of thoughts here regarding Department of Insurance hoping, as I am, that this new head of the Department of Insurance is going to come in, take over, and do a job, which probably means a lot of people are going to have to leave. I don't know. I don't know how you change a culture and demand people do their job, but maybe not. Maybe you can. Let's hope so. But anyway, I did want to address a little bit of the question here, as we have, okay? And the question here on the purveyors of the equity index annuities that we talk so eloquently about, right? So much about. But I did want to at least address some of the questions here, because it is fair to say, please be more specific than just saying you can't do that. I've been very specific, probably to the point of being a bore, for a lot of people, where there's people that say, look, I'm not going to do that, and so I'm not interested in the details, but I've certainly detailed what has actually happened with multiple contracts, and I can certainly do it today because I carry it with me in case these kind of questions come up. But I don't want to in the last few minutes that we have today in today's program. So we can address it some more. If there are people out there that want to talk more and more specifics about this and why it doesn't work, I'm happy to. And I have specific results from contracts taken out at precise moments that you would think would favor something like that, where you don't have where you have no market risk and they don't go down. The problem is this, and it's simple and straightforward. If you don't get market gains, I mean the full market gains, if they're capped at say 6 or 8% or a participation rate with a cap, you can't win. You cannot win. And they can change the rules in the middle of the game, and you can't. They can change the pricing, and you can't leave if you don't like the deal anymore. So we have talked about it, and if you all want to talk about it and talk about the specifics, I will again bring out these contracts, and we can talk about them. and what has actually happened, what the actual returns are from periods like doing it right before the 2008 meltdown, right before Bear Stearns. Remember that happened in the spring of 2008. And if you took out a contract that did that protected you from the downside, but look what happened. I mean, the market took off after that, right? That, you know, after the after 2009, in April of 2009, the market started up, and it's gone up big. So you think we protect the downside, and then you capture that upside. Even if it's a little bit capped, we would have massive returns, right? No. No. You don't. So I've got the specifics if we want to talk more about it. And I've got that other contracts too. So we've got it here if people want to talk about that. But I want to keep it, keep the program from getting bogged down in one particular product or another. But at the same time, if this is on people's mind, and I think it often is, give us a call. I'm happy to go through it. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. What I'm going to do is I'm going to get our final break out of the way, okay? And when we come back, I do want your phone calls. Let's go ahead and clear up the, any questions you have in the final 10 minutes we have. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. Idaho's place to talk. Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-KIDO is the number. Hey, any comments or questions, shoot those over to us during the week. Love to hear what you want us to focus on. And that's at petsofinancial.com. We'd love to hear from you anyway. All right, let's go ahead and go to the phones. Let's go to Ben in Nampa. Ben, thanks for holding.
Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Hey, I have a question about bonds. It's I don't quite understand.
Mm-hmm.
I keep hearing that if interest rates go down, the value of a bond goes up and vice versa. It seems to me that if I buy a bond at a particular interest rate and I hold it till maturity, that I get the face value plus the interest. So is the up and down thing, is that just on like a secondary market or something, or how does that work?
Absolutely. That's correct, Ben, yes. And so you're holding a bond in there because at any point in time, people are buying and selling bonds. They could. If you just buy a bond and hold it, you know, for 5 years or 10 years or whatever the period is, right, then you're absolutely correct under the assumption that the bond pays off. Now, I'm not saying like that's a rare occurrence, but it's certainly not rare that a company could default, okay?
Okay.
And you would only get part back. But if you're talking about a government bond, we have to make the assumption here that the credit quality is 100%, that it's simply going to pay off. So you're quite right. But the pricing can move very dramatically. But that, but Ben, see, my point earlier when we were talking earlier about the teeter-totter effect of bond prices, that's correct. In the interim, upon maturity, the bond will mature at par, meaning 100, which is the price you bought. Now, you could have bought it at a slight discount or a slight premium to par. That's possible in the bidding process that issues a bond. But normally, they're bought at 100, and they redeem for that. Okay?
So if I was to buy a bond, I don't know, say a 10-year bond or something, and I decided I wanted to sell it at 5 years, that up and down teeter totter thing you say, is that to protect the new buyer so that they get the right return on it? Is that
correct? Yeah, it's not really to protect it. It's just the bond market or the pricing is just simply a function of, let's say you buy that 10-year bond, okay? And let's just use round interest rates. We're not far off of this, and it certainly a month ago rates were right at 2. So let's say it's 2% on 10-year treasury.
Mm-hmm.
Let's suppose that 5 years from now, rates are 3% for a 10-year treasury.
For the new purchase ones.
The new purchase ones.
Right.
Now, that's not a fair comparison, what I'm really saying,
right.
But I want to say that first, and now I'm going to say it correctly, okay?
Okay.
Okay? You're 2% now, interest rates rise across the board, and now interest rates on a five years from now, interest rates on a five-year treasury are relatively high.
Okay.
Then you're going to have to discount your five-year, because what you now have is a five-year treasury, right?
Oh, okay.
Okay, you started with a 10, but 5 years down the road, it's a 5.
So the guy that would purchase my bond, I have to discount it to get him to buy mine instead of buying the new bond, which is at 3%.
Correct. You got it?
I'm not sure I've got it.
But, see, it's just a function of why would I buy your bond if I can get one that yields more? Well, because you're going to discount it so they yield the same.
Oh, that makes sense. Yes, I see that now.
Okay, and if interest rates decline, guess what? You want to sell it, you get a premium. Because I can't get that higher rate, and you have one.
Uh-huh. Well, that makes sense. So, essentially, at the end of the at the 10-year that I would have bought, or the 5-year that he would have bought, he would get essentially the same amount back, whether he bought mine or the new one.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Oh.
And that's exactly right. And that you really nailed it there, because the full understanding is it doesn't matter what the price of your bond is,
mm-hmm.
whether it's a discount or a premium, or
right.
I'm not going to get rid of this bond because it's yielding 8% in a 5% environment.
Uh-huh.
No. Because your yield to maturity, you would get a premium, and so much more premium on that bond, they all equal the same.
Okay. Well, that makes more sense.
There you go.
Those things are so...
I know. It's a pricing mechanism that's it's logical when you think about it, right?
Yeah, it does.
Got to roll. Money Matters
is brought to you in part by Petzl Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzl, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petzl Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. These are the opinions of Dave Petzl and are based on information from sources believed to be reliable but may change as information changes or becomes outdated. Nor should any opinion contained herein be construed or considered as a solicitation to buy or sell any particular investment product. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Asset allocation and diversification strategies cannot fully guarantee against loss. The past performance does not guarantee future results.